full agenda. Before we get the most important motion to adjourn.
What's he getting?
Are you on it?
Towns will get five.
You got on it?
Yeah.
Don't put me down.
Do you want to
call this Finance Committee meeting for March 13, 2012 to order. Currently present are Councilperson Kilpatrick, Sheldon, Belz, Hollins, Kovac, Weiner, Retta, and Smiley. Some procedural issues, bear everyone's indulgence. Councilwoman Diller will be a little late. She's got an illness in the family she's dealing with. And we all offer our best. Councilman Cartier's father has passed away. He will not be with us this evening. So we wish them all the best. Okay. Is there a motion on the minutes of February 28, 2012?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
There's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. The minutes are approved.
Okay.
First on the agenda is Ordinance 12-018 to amend pay plan and rates of pay for non-union unclassified service employees of the County Council. Mr. Kovac.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of Councilman Cartier not being here, we had some things to discuss about this. Some things had come up. I would move to table this, and I intend to table this to move to table this tonight to allow us to proceed forward in an informed manner for benefit of all concerned.
And we'll be happy to reinstate this on a future finance agenda when notified.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on the agenda is Substitute 1 to Ordinance Number 12-020 to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 14, Finance and Taxation, to provide a partial property tax exemption for non-residential properties to support economic development. That's under myself and Councilman Cartier. We actually discussed this previously, and what this does is it provides for a business that does a minimum of $50,000 of improvements to apply for an exemption on the increased assessed value for a period of 3 years. At which time, then the full assessment would be placed on the property. Is there any questions on this, further? None.
Okay.
Further comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is the ordinance that Mr. Kaulbacher had discussed with us earlier.
Yes.
Great. And requested it to be added as a sponsor.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Chair wants to recognize Councilman Street has joined us.
Everybody loves me.
I just thought we were early. Still got to get you on the record in case that subpoena shows up, bud. You got to prove where you were. Okay, next on the agenda, Substitute Number 1 to 12-021 to provide amnesty from penalty for homeowners who pay delinquent tax obligations by May 31st, 2012 on a primary residence. Myself and Mr. Cartier. And we actually had discussed this earlier as well. It's pretty much as it is in the title. Someone owes back taxes and has penalties and interest on it on their primary residence. So long as they pay them in full before May 31st, 2012, all penalties and interest will be waived. Any questions or comments from council? Councilman Street.
Does this or does this not include those individuals or organizations that have already entered into arrangements with the county?
It's strictly for primary residents, so it doesn't affect organizations at all. And I don't believe it's retroactive to anyone's in the payment plan, but I will yield to.
Hi, Laura Hay from the County Law Department. Councilman Smiley's correct, it's only for primary residences, so it shouldn't have a lot of effect on organizations. But if an individual who has primary residence has a payment plan, they could still get amnesty for whatever balance they have of rent. So we wouldn't operate retroactively payments they may have already made. But if they have a payment plan in place and they owe, you know, $2,000 and $400 of that penalty, if they pay all of the principal, then they would be entitled to the same amnesty as anybody else.
My point being, just for clarification, they would still need to pay the balance by the May date.
Indeed, they would.
They would have to pay in full.
That's correct.
If they're in a payment plan, and they're going to stay in the payment plan, this doesn't remove any penalties or interest that were already assessed there before that was entered. Unless they pay in full.
If they pay in full, it would remove all penalty that's currently off record, but nothing that may have already been paid or that's backward.
Councilman Street, you need to follow up. Yes, sir.
To the extent that we're doing this for owners of primary residence, why would we exclude organizations or agencies, especially nonprofits, who are carrying a similar kind of burden? I mean, the downfall in the economy has affected anybody.
Well, I would give finance, but I think the nonprofits are already experiencing a tax deferral, not deferral, an exemption.
Again, Laura Hay from the County Law Department. That's essentially true, although we try to take care to make sure we clarify that it's the requirement is it to be either a religious, educational, or charitable entity. So a nonprofit and a charity can sometimes be two different things. Often nonprofits do qualify, but it's not absolute.
Let me be completely forthcoming and put the concern on the table. One nonprofit in Councilman Howell's district, one in mine, are both having problems with taxes, and one in which property was initially acquired and the tax exempt status is not in place. Both of those agencies and organizations have arrangements, have made arrangements to pay the balance. And I don't know why something like this could not be developed if they can find the money. This is homeowners can find the money between now and May 30th. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Okay. The only thing I'm going to say is this is targeted strictly to try to keep the homeowners in their homes. I'm sure if you want to get with finance or the administration and work out something on another part and bring it forward, I'm always open to look at it. It's just committed on that.
Thank you, Chairman.
Councilman Tackett has joined us. Thank you, sir. Okay, next on the agenda. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we said this, but just for the record, if folks, maybe this goes to Laura Hay. If folks have paid their principal balance before this is enacted, they're not going to be entitled to a refund on their penalties or anything like that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Next on the agenda is substitute number 1 to 12-022 to amend Newcastle County Code, Chapter 14, Finance and Taxation, Article 2, Assessment of Real Property, and Chapter 2, Administration, Article 3, Officers and Employees Regarding Fees for Return Checks. This is under my sponsorship and Councilman Cartier, and what this is basically bringing the county and the row offices within the county closer to collecting the overdraft fees that we are charged when insufficient payment is submitted to the department. Any questions from the council? Anything from the public? Thank you. I have no J's, K's, or L's. Next on the agenda if you don't mind I'd like to move forward if you could bear with us I'd like to go out of order and get our grant work done and then we can move to the presentations. Is that all right with everybody? Okay, thank you. I'm going to move to consideration
of that, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I'll make it.
Okay, we got a motion. We got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, first on the agenda is the Police Unity Tour, Chapter 9 Incorporated. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This grant application comes to us as in the past, when we had funding available from now retired Sergeant Kathy Riddell from the Newcastle County Police. She serves as the president of the Police Unity Tour, the chapter that covers the tri-state area. And they're actually requesting for $2,500 to raise awareness of law enforcement officers that are killed in the line of duty, to honor and remember those officers, and raise funds for the National Law Enforcement Officers Museum Fund. She had, Sergeant Riddell had approached me for this grant and said that it would help sponsor officers this year of the Newcastle County Police Department, who will participate in the Police Unity Tour to honor their recently fallen brother officer, Lieutenant Joe Zerba. So I agreed to provide a $500 donation out of the 12th District Grant account line, and also Councilman Joe Retta has joined with me and will be also providing a $500 grant. And we did send an email out to all of council. If there's any other member of council that would like to contribute, we're at $1,000. And I believe that each officer that actually rides in the Police Unity Tour, and this is a bicycle-type event from New York down to Washington, their sponsorship, they have to raise approximately $1,750 each individual officer. So Sergeant Riddell is saying that this will assist the officers from our own county police department to participate. So with that being said, we're up to $1,000, and if anyone else would like to join.
Councilman Bell, if I did not respond to the email, I certainly intended to, so I'll add $5 to it.
Is that 100, sir?
Yes, sir.
Just want to clarify.
No, you don't make it 1,000.
Well, I thought it'd make $5.
Can I work on the weekend? It is $500.
Okay, we have a motion for Police Unity Tour to receive a grant. Councilman Bell, in the amount of $5. Councilman Jackson.
Yeah, Councilman Bell, your office may have missed the email, but I did respond back. And
okay.
I wasn't even sure if I was going to spend anything, but I did commit to saying that I would put 200 in. So
okay.
It was, you know.
Very much appreciated.
Yeah.
And I had responded also for 250.
Okay, so it sounds like we're up to about 1,950.
Yes.
If I'm correct. And
250.
Mr. Holmes.
Sounds like we're at a bidding. What do we get for this?
We're up to 2,150.
2,200.
Or no, 2,200, I'm sorry. 2,200.
Okay. On the record, we're getting ready to vote on a Police Unity Tour grant request in the amount of 2,200. 500 from Councilman Bell, 500 from Councilman Retta, 500 from Councilman Street, 200 from Councilman Tackett, 250 from Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and 250 from Councilwoman, Councilman Holland. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to kick in $300.
I was going to do them.
See, just don't.
Do you want one? No, I was going to do it. 150. You want to do 150?
Yes.
Do you want to do 150?
Okay.
Is it
150
or clarifications, we now have $150 from the grant account of Councilman Weiner and from Councilman Sheldon for the maximum of $2,500 as allowed. Okay. So motion for a grant, Police Unity Tour Incorporated, in the amount of $2,500. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay.
Chair.
Oh,
Chair.
I'm sorry. Not voting.
Not voting.
And not voting. We still have 7, right? Okay. Okay. Next on the agenda is the Brandywine Community Resource Council. Councilman Cartier, is he going to put 1,000? Okay. This is, I'm going to handle this for Councilman Cartier so he can move it forward. This grant is for $1,000. and this is, it's basically the Claymont Community Center and all of those processes, procedures, you know, the Head Start program, Delaware State Service, Adopt a Family, all the things that they run through their forum up there. So there's a motion for $1,000 from Councilman Cartier for the Brandywine Community Resource Council. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
No? Those not voting?
Not voting.
President Kovac and Councilman Smiley. Okay, next on the agenda is the Midway Little League Incorporated. The request is for $2,500. Councilman Sheldon.
Mr. Chair, we've done this in the past. Actually, myself and Councilman Retta, it splits right on our line. I think if the ball goes over too far, it's on my side and so forth.
Well, it's a foul ball.
Well, I think it's a foul ball.
I think he put a fence up for his grant.
But he may have, but they're looking for lights now after the fence. And I know some of the state reps and everybody's looking into this because right now they do not have enough room, as we know. So I am going to commit $500, and Councilman Retta said he would give $500 also to make it $1,000.
Can we hear that from Councilman Retta?
On the recording.
I don't want to speak for him.
I heard him say $2,000 for you.
No.
Okay.
But yeah, $1,000. We'd like to pledge $500 apiece for the new lights on the field.
There's a motion for a grant from Midway Little League in the amount of $1,000. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting?
Not voting.
President Kovac and Councilman Smiley.
Thank you.
The last one we have is Our Daily Bread Dining Room, MOT Incorporated. Request listed as $1,000. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually an outreach program that has been created and started in the MOT area. Our Daily Bread Dining Room. They have quite a lot of folks that are working along to further develop it. But basically, it's to feed low-income families, individuals, children, the elderly, who are impoverished with problems of financial stress, and to help with nutrition, healthy meals. And I'll ask Ruby just to nod her head, but both Bill Powers and I agreed to put in $500 apiece to the Middletown.
She's wearing the neck brace, Councilman. I'm assuming that's a yes.
Yes. We actually went back to them a few times, and I think you'll see by the length of their package, they included a lot.
Yes.
Which is good.
I appreciate that. Okay, we have a motion for Our Daily Bread Dining Room for a grant amount of $1,000. $500 from Councilman Bell, $500 from Councilman Powers. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting? President Kovac, Councilman Smiley. At the risk of annoying everyone and being redundant, I just want to say once again how much I appreciate the work that's being put into making sure that these grant applications are proper when they come forward. I am scrutinizing every one of them so that we follow the guidelines that we put in place, and I'm sure you'd rather hear me doing that than complaining that they're not. So good job on behalf of everybody's staff. Tara, good job telling them we don't have the money. Okay, next on the agenda, we're going back into the regular order of business. Just to be formal about it, we have a motion. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now, if we can have next on the agenda is discussion of the county OPEB, which is other post-employee benefits liability.
Ed Melwick from the finance office. Dave Boomershon, the actuary, will be doing a presentation. This is a request we got about a month ago from President Kovac to discuss the county's liability and the OPEB. So Dave Boomershon will be doing a presentation, and I have handouts of the presentations.
This is what I need. I just went to school for 7 days.
And just for the record, Councilman Smiley prefers the reusable binders.
I got 3 credits for work, school, and business, just to let you know that.
Nice.
So it'll take me about 18 more years to get an AA degree.
And you got a good job.
No, I'll retire. Are you kidding me? I'll retire before that's going to happen.
Do you have a ghost?
No, I'll never go back.
Councilwoman Diller is with us. Thank you.
Tough play, I'm telling you. It's a wonderful play. Yeah.
Dave, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Dave Boomershine, Boomershine Consulting Group, and Actuary, Boone County. Nice to see you all again. Thank you for having me. As we go through this, and I'll try and move and stay on the pace here. If you have questions at any time, just stop me and ask me, and we'll take the discussion wherever you want to go. First of all, I'm going to go over a little bit of background about the other post-employment benefits, or I'll start calling it OPEB. Unfortunately, there's lots of acronyms with this standard. But then I'm going to do a little bit of background on the Government Accounting Standards Board, GASB, and the overview for the requirements, the relatively new requirements that have been around for a few years about the plan. And then kind of go over the 2010 actuarial evaluation results. The evaluation is required every 2 years, so there's going to be an update completed later on this year. And I'll talk a little bit about the net OPEB obligation, the NOO, which is the liability that shows up on your financial statement, which is the primary concern from GASB. The OPEB plan, it primarily is the retiree medical plan. And in the retiree medical plan, once people retire, they're eligible for benefits, they can continue benefits as we go forward. GASB has new requirements on the accounting for these types of plans. There is also life insurance benefits, but they're relatively small compared to the retiree medical. So, talking about GASB, there are primarily two features that we have concerns about, two requirements that come from GASB. And that is that you've got to book an actuarial cost, an annual cost on your financial statements, and you have to accrue a liability on your financial statements. Now, there's one misconception. And we'll be getting to numbers in a few slides after we go through a little bit of overview and general discussion. But the actuarial liability is a number that is determined. It's a very large number, but it's part of the actuarial evaluation. There's a misconception that that's the number that shows up on your financial statements, and that is not correct. What shows up as a liability as the net OPEB obligation, the NOO, is that we determine an annual cost, and then we also compare what the plan sponsors, what the county's contributions are against those costs as we go forward every year. To the extent that we don't pay the full cost and there's a disparity between the cost and the contributions, that's the net OPEB obligation. That's the liability that shows up on the financial statement on a cumulative basis.
Mr. Chair?
Justin Moore.
Yes. Is that actuarial cost a cumulative projected cost projected into the future and then discounted to present value?
Yes.
Thank you.
And it'll make a lot more sense once we get to the numbers. The answer is yes.
Thank you.
And when we do evaluation, we actually take four inputs into account. We take the employee census data, we take the plan assets, we take the plan provisions, and then we use actuarial assumptions to do these projections out into the future. We use our model, and as Councilman said, we project down to the future, bring it back to the present, and then translate it into an annual cost so that we have an ongoing cost as we go forward. A few more acronyms from GASB requirements. Under GASB 45, is there is an ARC, an annual required contribution. That's the basic annual cost. But then as we go forward every year, there's also an annual OPEB cost, which is primarily the same as the ARC with a few adjustments if you have a liability on the books. And then again, another key element is the net OPEB obligation, which is the liability as we go forward. And as you go forward, if you don't do anything about funding the costs, that NOO becomes much larger. If you're addressing the costs as you go forward, you keep it minimized and you keep going forward, which is what you're going to see in a little bit for what the county's done. So advanced funding, and we need to separate this out. Advanced funding is not required for OPEB plans, not like pension plans. This is an accounting standard, and to the extent that you don't fund, you are going to have some issues going forward, which I'm going to be getting into. But the advantages of advanced funding, of setting up a trust fund and putting money into it to fund these benefits, is that you'll keep your liability on the financial statements closer to zero. You'll be minimizing it. And there's another key. You'll be able to use a more favorable discount rate in your actuarial evaluation. The discount rate is the interest rate that you use to do the discounting for the present values in the actual evaluation. And as we go through the next couple of slides, you'll see how key that concept is. So there's some major cost drivers as part of this valuation process. One is the actuarial assumptions. That discount rate is the key item that has an impact on the plan costs and the plan liabilities. We also have a healthcare trend rate as we go forward into the future, and we make assumptions about when people are going to retire. Now, that's on the assumption side. On the plan design side, one of the keys that we've seen as changes go on across the country with government retiree medical plans is that there's an increase in retiree cost sharing. Right now, the county, and there's a number of different stages, multi-layers in the plan, but on average, the county is subsidizing retiree medical coverage by about 70%. So the county is providing 70%, the employee on average is providing about 30%. And that's pretty competitive right now.
Thank you, Mr. Prudenshine. Going back to, before we get too far on the actuarial assumptions, the discount rate assumption, you said that's the, kind of the key driver. In what way? I mean, how does that affect things? What do you mean by when you say the discount rate's the key driver? How does that affect things, or are you going to get into that later?
Perfect segue.
Oh.
Next slide.
Hey, there you go. I was reading ahead.
And you are absolutely right. This is so key. Because one of the things that GASB established, they specifically addressed this discount rate issue and said that the source of funds that you use to pay benefits should be the basis for determining the discount rate. What that all means is that there's a range of discount rates. For the people who continue pay-as-you-go funding, which is actually the second bullet here, if you're going to continue pay-as-you-go, which is what all plans were doing in the past, then you're paying the benefits out of the general fund, ultimately. And if the general fund is restricted to fixed income, conservative-type investments, then you should be using a discount rate of about 4%. Now, the key here is that the lower the discount rate, the higher the present values, the higher the actual liabilities, the higher the annual costs. And it has a substantial impact. On the other end, the bookends here, if you're going to fully fund your annual costs each year, set up a trust fund, end up with a diversified portfolio that's going to earn a lot more investment income, then you could be using a discount rate closer to 8%. Now, this is historically, you could have used 8%. This is changing now, and in fact is moving down to 7.75, 7.5. In fact, for the pension fund this year, which is a report we'll be addressing in the future, at a future date, we'll be changing the discount rate to about to 7.5%. So instead of 8, well, maybe 7.5%. And again, the converse is true. The higher the discount rate, the more that you're funding the plan benefits, then the lower the present values, the lower the annual, actual liabilities, the lower the annual costs. It is an absolute key. And then at the bottom, if you're going to do partial funding, which is what the county is doing, if you're going to address this issue as much as possible, but not go all the, be able to go all the way to full funding, then GASB specifically says you should prorate between the two bookends. So we're partial funding, we're in the middle, we're using a discount rate of 6% for the county's OPEB actuarial valuation. So you are doing something about it. But you'll see the news gets even a little bit better when we get to the numbers. So pre-funding is clearly cheaper over time. You do have the discount rate advantage, you can use something higher than the pay-as-you-go funds. You're keeping the unfunded liability down. You're keeping the NOO liability on the financial statements down, you're minimizing it. And you are also reducing the annual cost and the NOO because you're using the better discount rate as we go forward. Now, one of the keys that's behind this, one of the hammers, GASB recognized this, is that to the extent that you're doing something about it and you're using a higher discount rate and so on, the bond ratings agencies are going to look on this favorably. I've co-presented with representatives from bond rating agencies at conferences, and back in the beginning being a few years ago when GASB was brand new, the bond rating agencies said, we're going to not overreact to this immediately, to this brand new issue. We know that everybody's got sticker shock. We know people are going to try and do something about this. What we're going to do is watch this for several years and see, relatively speaking, which governments are going to address the issue, or they're going to bury their head in the sand and not do anything about it, continue pay as you go. And relatively speaking, as we go forward, the ones that are doing something about that, we're going to look favorably upon that. Now, that was a couple of years ago. They're still holding off a little bit because the economy has gone south. Everybody's having trouble. But they are clearly watching this as a key issue as we go forward. The end result of bond ratings could be minimizing future tax increases, and clearly setting up a trust fund will help secure the benefits for future retirees.
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Isn't there, although it's not required, isn't there a recommended percentage for partial funding, a 90% or 80%? And if so, aren't we meeting that goal?
Okay. For the OPEB plan, eventually you want to get there. The key comparison that you're talking about is really for pension plans.
Yes.
And okay. What we're saying is that what the market is pretty much saying is a plan that's well funded is 80% funded.
80%. Mm-hmm.
Which, frankly, I can tell you that's where your pension fund is.
Okay.
So we're in the 80s for the pension. For the OPEB fund, okay. Starting off with zero assets, you're not going to be at that level for a long time. And that's true for every plan across the country. Okay. Now, bond rating agencies, what they said in the beginning was, we're looking for, quote unquote, a funding plan. But they actually are talking about two different things. Funding plan could be, are you going to fund the benefits, fund the costs as we go forward, set up a trust fund? So that you could either fund it, or you could do something about plan design. Reduce the benefits, change the eligibility, change the retiree cost sharing, change it in some way that you're reducing the costs and the liabilities. So either one is a funding plan for the agencies. What they're really looking to see is who's going to do something about this or not. So let's look at some numbers. And that's why you have a handout in front of you, because the numbers get small up here. But this is from the 2010 actual evaluation. We're using a 6% discount rate, which is the partial funding approach. There's about 2,300 participants, which includes ACEs, retirees, and spouses, who are included in the evaluation. And I'll just go down the numbers quickly on the right-hand side, because there's another page of numbers that would be more meaningful. But the results of the evaluation was the total actuarial liability is $277 million. We have assets of about $10 million. So we subtract the assets from that liability. We have an unfunded liability, $266 million. That's a mortgage. It's got to be paid off, and it's going to be paid off over a 30-year period as allowed under GASB rules. So we take that, and we take the 30-year amortization, it's about $13 million. We add it to the normal cost, which is the value of benefits accruing each year. So we add the $13 million. We have a total annual required contribution of $24 million. According to GASB rules, we make a few minor adjustments for the accounting purposes, and we end up with a total annual OPEB cost of about $23 million. That's the cost, the annual cost that goes into your financial statements. And then what we do is we compare the expected contributions. These are the estimated expected contributions when we did the valuation, so we're looking forward a year. And we estimated total contributions both to the trust fund and to pay retiree premiums of about $8 million. We have an implicit rate subsidy credit, which I'll talk about in a minute, of about $3 million. We have total contribution credits of about $11.6 million. So what you'll see that is exactly half of the AOC. So we're half funding, 6% discount rate, which means that if our contributions are half of the cost, then half is also going into an increase in the net OPEB obligation, which again is on a cumulative basis. So we're increasing the NOO by $11 million. It was at $28 million the year before. If we add those two pieces together, we expect the liability on your books for the OPEB plan to be at about $40 million as of June 30th, 2011, so 1 year later. So we're doing half funding in the estimates. Now, go back to the question that was asked. I'm gonna come back and address comparable numbers in a second. But comparing the OPEB plan to the left, the pension plan to the right, looking at the pension plan, we have actuarial liability $486 million. We have assets of $411 million. As of January 1, 2011, 2011 valuation, the funding ratio is at 85% for the pension fund. That's the 80% comparison we were talking about. And we'll be having the 2012 update in the next couple months. Looking at the OPEB plan, you had started off with zero assets. This is the concern that everybody had, that GASB had. 277 million liability, 10 million assets. Your funding ratio is 4%, which again is very comparable, is not just comparable, is better than what you'll see for almost all of your plans. In fact, there's a one-page handout that I'm going to hit right at the very end that will show you a comparison with what the state's doing.
Yeah, I have an interesting question. I know the requirement to fund post-employment benefits went into effect for the private sector, was it 5 years before the government ordered
it? It was 15 years.
15 years.
Back in the early 90s.
Okay. I know when it went into effect because then they started phasing out the health care for retirees.
Correct.
Did any government entities that you're aware of say, hey, let's start funding this now so we're ahead of the curve?
A couple.
Because apparently we did.
Right.
I mean, because we'd have been real good if all that extra money that was coming in back then had been used to satisfy what we knew was going to be a future obligation.
I agree.
Or some of it. So it's a minimal amount, actually.
Because only a few plans on the government side ever thought or addressed this.
I know even in the private sector, the thought was next administration would be rescinding this and we wouldn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. But that never came about.
That's right. So,
but that was the thought process from what I got from people I dealt with.
But the interesting thing, too, is that GASB rules are not the same as FASB rules. FASB rules are much more onerous, put much higher liabilities onto the financial statements than the GASB rules do. GASB rules follow the pension approach where you do this on a cumulative, long-term approach. The FASB rules in the private sector were really much more clear about, we're looking at short-term, a lot more volatility is created by that. So we're comparing apples to oranges when private to public sector. And the public sector, we do expect to go, governments to go a much longer period. So we should be looking at long-term.
Yeah, but I was just looking at that window before the requirement kicked in. Whether
only a couple plans. Actually, yeah, there were a few, less than 1%.
Thank you.
Okay, now let's look at the NOO development with the actual results that went into your comprehensive annual financial report, the CAFR. Where we have the exact same costs we talked about before, we have $24 million for ARC, $23 million AOC. Now we have the actual employer contributions that were paid for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2011. And we have the total contributions. There was an extra additional contribution that was added in, about $4 million, added into what was anticipated. So that the total annual contributions are $15 million versus the $23 million. So we have an increase in the NOO of about $8 million instead of the $15 million in the estimates. I'm sorry, the $11 million. So we add that to the $28 million at the beginning of the year. And your liability that's on your financial statement at the end of the year is $36 million, not $40 million. From the actuarial viewpoint, this is excellent results. You are clearly doing something about this issue. You are clearly funding something. You are not burying your head in the sand. You're doing a great job of funding these plans.
What was the, why was the number 4 million lower than it projected? Could you get into that a little bit more detail? I mean, you said all of a sudden 5 million came in from where? What was okay. That? Where did that come in from?
Going back to the estimate on the other slide,
okay.
That was forecast looking forward, that those were the estimated. I believe they come from the budget process. So we had an estimated contribution going in. When we got to the end of the year, we realized we could do a little bit more about this. So.
Yeah, Ed Miller, the finance office. Any year we have funds from healthcare costs that are not being used, and we've been doing this since we started the OPEB fund, get transferred into the OPEB fund. This year, there's $4 million of unused health care funds that got moved into the OPEB fund to help toward that obligation.
Okay. Can I follow up with that?
Sure.
So that's money that we had budgeted since,
we're self-insured. Right.
So that was money that we budgeted that we didn't spend on that, so you then invested OPEB, that back into
OPEB
the...
OPEB is part of the total employee benefits budget. You have workers' comp, pension, health care. Yeah, and OPEP is really part of healthcare, really, if you look at it that way. So basically, that money from there got moved into the OPEP, so rearranged within the OPEP at this point. Okay. And we've been doing that since we started this application. It's really budgeting, or currently budgeting, about $2 million a year, $2.3 million a year toward this obligation.
And just quickly to follow up, is that done automatically every year? Is that just the current policy, or is that that decision?
Well, I said this is only business.
Oh, a couple of years, right.
So we've been doing that as policy ever since we started this.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Shelby.
Because I'm not on the insurance plan. Are we self-funded, or are we fully insured plan?
Our healthcare?
Yeah.
We're self-funded. We have Blue Cross or Annette, the minister of the healthcare.
Coverage. Okay, but we're self-funded.
We're self-funded.
Okay.
We're self-insured. Yeah, we have a stop-loss coverage.
Right,
policy.
right.
So, yeah.
Good.
Okay. There was just, there was an additional page, I don't have a slide for it. There's an additional page that was stuck into your booklets. It was the fiscal year 2011 OPEB plan comparison. And this is a quick comparison after discussions with Greg and Ed that we put together comparing what's happening with the county versus what's happening at the state level for their OPEB plans. So the left-hand column, you can see we're at the 4% funded level. In fact, the assets as of June 30, 2011, the 4% funded level is as of July 1, 2010, comparing the liabilities and the assets. As of June 30, 2011, the assets are now at $18 million after we add in those employer contributions. So it's probably more like a 6% funded level at this point, or at least a 5%. On the state level, we compare their assets to their liabilities at the same date, and they were funded at a 2% level. So your funding level is double. You're actually doing more in the early years of this requirement. And to further that comment, as of June 30th, 2011, again, these are numbers from your CAFR, funded 15 of the $23 million cost. You paid 66% of the annual cost requirement. And that's how you can get to a 6% next valuation. You may actually be able to do a little bit better on that 6%. We'll be looking at that as we do the 2012 valuation. But on the state level, they only paid 37% of the annual cost. And they're using a discount rate of 4.25%. Much lower rate, much higher costs and liabilities as they go forward. I frankly think they could have used something a little bit higher, but maybe 4.5, 4.75. They clearly cannot claim a 6% discount rate as part of the valuation process. So these are all good things. You're doing a great job of addressing this issue, of doing something about it. I compliment you and executive staff on this.
Just to follow up on what Dave's saying, though, what the state did...
And this is Mr. Millerwig.
Ed Millerwig from the finance office. What the state, Governor Mark Ellis, did, I think, last year, that for new employees at the state, they are tiering their health care coverage when they retire based on years of service. We did not do that yet in Newcastle County. That is something we've talked about. I think at the last negotiations, I think the non-union and the appointments in America would change to that type of coverage when they retire. I think the sheriff's office also agreed to that. Healthcare is in union contracts, so we'd have to negotiate that. But a lot of governments are doing that the way that they can lower their OPEB liabilities for the next person in the door to have their healthcare coverage tiered based on years of service. I mean, your pension is based on years of service. Where in the county, the healthcare is not based on years of service as far as coverage when you retire. So that is something a lot of governments are heading toward, that type of tiered healthcare coverage depending on years of service.
And these are issues that we're going to look at with the 2012 valuation and get some results.
Okay, anything further from council? Public? Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, a little more housekeeping. Next on the agenda, the solicitation policy discussion, and no, that has nothing to do with the ladies in my district. Councilman Cartier had placed this on the agenda. He's not here, so we'll be postponing this to another meeting. However, council members will be receiving some additional preliminary information that you can look at in preparation for the meeting when we do discuss it. Next, we have expense and revenue roundtable. Got anything to bring forward at this time? Okay, hearing none. Next, I need a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing pending litigation and strategy and to obtain advice from legal counsel.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All not voting? Okay, Mr. Wilson, would you like to designate who you wish to remain?
Just Mr. Milwicki and...
That's actually
just so. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm going to tell you.
Hey, Judy.
More there than you thought?
Oh, yeah.
Close the door again. Okay, Finance Committee meeting, March 13th, 2012, is back in session. While in executive session, we discussed pending litigation strategy and obtained legal advice from legal counsel. No votes were taken.
Oh, goodness.
I'd like to make a motion to authorize the county legal department to proceed with the proposed litigation settlement as presented to county council in executive session.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Public comment. Is there anything under other? Councilman Street.
That piece that the administration took over, sent over in regard to whatever they called it in regard to taxes and not county not taking people's property from taxes. I just want to make sure everybody knows essentially it's not worth the paper it's printing on because it doesn't include school districts. And school districts where of course who have the highest taxes, they could care less. They're going in.
And I'll just say we understand because when it was
I just want to make sure everybody understands.
No, because when it was presented to us, it was said they contacted the school districts, yeah. Tried to get them to partner with us, reached out to them, and the school districts refused to do it. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up with that, is that for the ordinance that weighs the penalty, or are we talking about the procedure?
The executive order.
The executive order, okay. Yeah, because the procedure that we talked about in the ordinance would still waive all those penalties,
yes,
including...
Yes, they did part of them.
Okay. Good. Okay. Just checking. I want to make sure that the ordinance...
And it's just all exasperating me. And I think probably my first year in office... We passed a resolution to notify General Assembly that it is a nonprofit organization. That if the majority of school districts approve the rebate and refund the taxes, that it will be still locked into or for having to approve. And
five.
And you know, 1981, we went to four districts. This was imposed on us. Well, if the court order is lifted, the court order is lifted. They need to take their own stuff and deal with it, as opposed to us being continued to be tied to it. That's just my opinion.
Okay. Anything else under other? Hearing none, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
That was a motion to adjourn. There's a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting? Okay. Thank you very much. Public safety next.